Left at a lot, Mancini read out loud. Cassano turned left out of the lot. Dorothy, the housekeeper, made a third pot of coffee. She rinsed the percolator and filled it again and set it going. She said,
Seth Duncan had a hard time in school. He got bullied. 8-year-old boys can be very tribal. I guess they felt they had permission to go after him because of the whispers at home, and none of the girls stuck with him. They wouldn't go to his house, and they wouldn't even talk to him. That's how children are. That's how it was. All except one girl. Her parents had raised her to be decent and compassionate. She wouldn't go to his house, but she still talked to him. Then one day that little girl just disappeared.
Reacher said, And?
It's a horrible thing when that happens. You have no idea. There's a kind of crazy period at first, when everyone is mad and worried, but can't bring themselves to believe the worst. You know, a couple of hours, maybe 3 or 4, you think she's playing somewhere. Maybe out picking flowers. She's lost track of the time. She'll be home soon, right as rain. No one had cell phones back then, of course. Some people didn't even have regular phones. Then you think the girl has gotten lost, and everyone starts driving around looking for her. Then it goes dark, and then you call the cops.
Reacher asked, What did the cops do?
Everything they could. They did a fine job. They went house to house. They used flashlights. They used loud hailers to tell everyone to search their barns and outbuildings. They drove around all night. Then at first light they got dogs and called in the state police, and the state police called in the National Guard, and they got a helicopter.
Nothing? The woman nodded.
Nothing. Then I told them about the Duncans.
You did?
Someone had to. As soon as I spoke up, others joined in. We were all pointing our fingers. The state police took us very seriously. I guess they couldn't afford not to. They took the Duncans to a barracks over near Lincoln and questioned them for days. They searched their houses. They got help from the FBI. All kinds of laboratory people were there.
Did they find anything?
Not a trace.
Nothing at all.
Every test was negative. They said the child hadn't been there.
So what happened next?
Nothing. It all fizzled out. The Duncans came home. The little girl was never seen again. The case was never solved. The Duncans were very bitter. They asked me to apologize for naming names, but I wouldn't. I couldn't give it up. My husband neither. Some folks were on our side, like the doctor's wife, but most weren't, really. They saw which way the wind was blowing. The Duncans withdrew into themselves. Then they started punishing us, like revenge. We didn't get our crop hauled that year. We lost it all. My husband killed himself. He sat right in that chair, where you're sitting, and he put his shotgun under his chin.
I'm sorry.
The woman said nothing.
Reacher asked, Who was the girl?
No reply.
Yours, right?
Yes, the woman said. It was my daughter. She was 8 years old. She'll always be 8 years old.
She started to cry, and then her phone started to ring. Chapter 17. The phone was a clunky old Nokia. It was on the kitchen counter. It hopped and buzzed and trilled the old Nokia tune that Reacher had heard 1,000 times before, in bars, on buses, on the street. Dorothy snatched it up and answered. She said hello, and then she listened to what sounded like a fast, slurred message of some kind, maybe a warning, and then she clicked off and dropped the phone like it was scalding hot.
That was Mr. Vincent, she said, over at the motel.
Reacher said, And?
T Two men were there.
They're coming here, right now. Who?
We don't know.
Men we've never seen before. She opened the kitchen door and glanced down a hallway toward the front of the house. There was silence for a second, and then Reacher heard the distant hiss of tires on blacktop, the moan of a slowing engine, the sound of brakes, and then the crunch of a wheel on gravel, then another, then two more together as a car turned in and bumped onto the track. The woman said,
"Get out of here, please. They can't know you're here."
"We don't know who they are."
"They're Duncan people. Who else would they be? I can't let them find you here. It's more than my life is worth."
Reacher said, "I can't get out of here. They're already on the track."
"Hide out back. Please, I'm begging you. They can't find you here. I mean it."
She stepped out to the hallway, ready to meet them head on at the front door. They were close and moving fast. The gravel was loud. She said,
"They might search. If they find you, tell them you snuck in the yard, over the fields, please. Tell them I didn't know. Make them believe you. Tell them you're nothing to do with me."
Then she closed the door on him and was gone. Angelo Mancini folded the sheet of handwritten directions and put it in his pocket. They were on some lumpy, bumpy piece of shit farm track, heading for some broken-down old, woe-begone piece of shit farmhouse that belonged in a museum or a history book. The navigation screen showed nothing at all, just white space. Roberto Cassano was at the wheel, hitting every pothole. What did he care? They were Hertz's tires, not his. Up ahead, the front door opened, and an old woman appeared on the step, clutching the jam like she would fall over if she let go. Mancini said, "That's a woman with a guilty secret right there. Count on it." "Looks that way," Cassano said. Reacher checked the view across the yard at the back, maybe 60 feet to the parked pickup, maybe 60 more to the line of barns and sheds and coops and sties. He eased the door open. He turned back and checked the door to the front hallway. It was closed, but he could hear the car. It was crunching to a stop. Its doors were opening. He sensed the woman out there, staring at it, fearful and panicking. He shrugged and turned again to leave. His gaze passed over the kitchen table. Not good.
"They might search. Tell them I didn't know."
The table held the remains of two breakfasts. Two oatmeal bowls, two plates all smeared with egg, two plates all full of toast crumbs, two spoons, two knives, two forks, two coffee mugs. He put his toast plate on his egg plate, and he put his oatmeal bowl on his toast plate, and he put his coffee mug in his oatmeal bowl, and he put his knife and fork and spoon in his pocket. He picked up the teetering stack of china and carried it with him across the kitchen, out the door. He held the stack one-handed and pulled the door shut after him and set off across the yard. The ground was beaten dirt mixed with crushed stone and matted with winter weeds. It was reasonably quiet underfoot, but the shakes in his arm were rattling the mug in the bowl. He was making a tinkling noise with every step he took. It sounded as loud as a fire alarm. He passed the pickup truck, headed onward to a barn. It was an old, sway-backed thing made from thin, tarred boards. It was in poor condition. It had twin doors, hinged in the conventional way, not sliders. The hinges were shot and the doors were warped. He hooked a heel behind one of them and forced his ass into the gap and pushed with his hip and scraped his way inside, back first, then his shoulders, then the stack of crockery.